Good morning and welcome to everyone. Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, April 29, 2010. Okay. Let's all wake up. Get through this. First item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday evening's regular City Council meeting. Page 2. Page 3. Excuse me, Mr. Brady, you had something.
Yes, I did.
On which?
Mayor, on the CDBG items, Mr. Villa would like to kind of give council an update and also talk about going forward in some of these programs as a follow-up from the discussion.
That's
with
item number 4?
Actually, it would be items 5A through 5F. Yeah, but yes.
Yes.
Ray, do you want to go ahead and?
Sure. We're currently in the public comment period. That's why we're going to have the public comment meeting on May 3rd. But one of the things that we heard from council over the last few weeks is, at least I heard it, that we need to move forward with trying to outsource as many of the services that we do internally to the outside. And a couple of areas that we're working real hard to try to do that, and we're going to be doing that this coming year, is we're going to be outsourcing like the fair housing activities that occur with fair housing. We'll be doing that, and we're looking at ways to do that. We're also going to, this year, we're going to put out an RFP in the fall to seek outside services for doing our housing and rehab activities that we've been doing here internally, and we will put out an RFP to try to get that accomplished to see what we get from the outside. So we're kind of excited. We think that, you know, we'll be able to kind of look at these things a little closer and see what might be available. And then we'll also take a look at any other areas that where we might be able to outsource them out to the community.
And then, Ray, I thought also just we'll continue to emphasize, I think, the priority of the council on the homeownership programs as we go forward into the future allocations. That's one of the things we talked about also.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Councilmember Summers.
As part of the RFP, I would like to see how these potential companies taking over what you're doing now are going to be leveraging other private dollars to do it. The intent of this, I think, when we started this whole conversation, was that there would be private entities that could either do it cheaper or, more importantly, be able to leverage additional dollars into the program so that our program expands its scope. So what I don't want to see is somebody just taking it over and then charging an administrative fee, and so fewer dollars end up out on the street. So I want to see how this thing works out. With how are they going to bring more dollars to the table than what the city can do?
Okay, we'll do.
Okay, Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Ray. I think what you're talking about is moving in a positive direction. I still have a concern, and you may recall a comment I made several weeks ago, is that I'm still having difficulty with my position on your recommendations for funding, because I don't know the reasons for the recommendations for funding or for not funding. For example, I can't explain to the residents in my district why, for example, Webster Recreation Center is not getting any money and Washington Activity Center is getting a whole lot of money. And so it would, again, I think for me as an elected official to be able to intelligently vote on the recommendations, I need to know the reasons why recommendations are made to fund or reasons are made why not. I may very well agree with 100% of the reasons that you give, but if you don't give them, it makes it difficult for me in the job. And that's, again, an example that I have no explanation to give to residents in my district. So again, that would be helpful. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Higgins.
Just and to add on to that, included in those discussions, could you tell us how many children are actually helped at, like, on the Webster line? You know, and this just goes into the explanations. You have 750 after-school kids that have fee assistance, but could you come up with that number for the Washington Activity Center too, so we can see 1,000, 10,000, how many kids come through there?
Yes,
we can do that. Great, thanks.
Mayor, Council, I guess let's be clear, that item is in there because that's the direction we received from council. If the council would prefer us not to use...
2 years ago.
2 years ago, and we've maintained that.
Yeah.
We attempted to work with the neighborhoods, as reported last year, to bring in the Boys and Girls Club, the YCMA. That neighborhood group, the neighborhood area, and the constituents in that area didn't feel that it was... They were in a position to be able to pay a fee for those after-school programs because that was different than what service had been provided in the past. As you recall, this program was proposed to be eliminated, and it was the council's direction to fund this program. So, I mean, we can explain that again, but I guess we're losing the historical context.
We're actually looking at two sort of related but separate issues here. We just happen to choose this as an example.
Okay.
I think what Councilman Kavanaugh was talking about is, I mean, we understand, well, I hope we understand, or at least we remember Washington, because that was a discussion we had 2 years ago. We continued it last year. And so we understand why the decision to include Washington was in there. I think all the other items that are on there, if I'm hearing Councilman Kavanaugh right, is there are other items that are excluded. And perhaps, you know, the reasoning of staff is, Webster didn't get included because council gave us the direction on Washington, and we ran out of money. It just wasn't there. And at least that's what we know. And so I think it's not the explanation to support the decision to do Washington, but it's perhaps explanations on some other line items as to why staff recommended this versus that, or recommend that this not be part of the allocation. Is that an accurate restatement? Okay. All right. So, I don't know when you want to get that or how you want to do that.
Yeah, well, we'll have to. Council, this is on your agenda for Monday.
Yeah. Mr. Brady, Councilman Kavanaugh.
But, Chris, this is an issue that we talked about several weeks ago. And so this is not a late arriving issue. We talked about the challenge that we have as elected officials, particularly this year, because the advisory board recommendations were educational only. And so basically what we have is staff recommendations. And when we are making policy choices of picking either winners or losers or differing amounts for things, I think we need to understand the thought process. And that's what I raised several weeks ago, that it would be helpful. It would be an asset for the council to be able to understand and defend it, because ultimately we're the ones voting on it, and we're the ones that either will take the credit or the blame for the allocation of the funds. And so that's where I'm coming from, is that, we have the spreadsheet, but there's nothing on the spreadsheet to say this program has great merit, or we've done it for 20 years, it's operating great, or we're not funding XYZ because we simply ran out of funds, or they didn't complete the application properly, or there's funding in other areas, things like that. That just helps us, I think, as a group, because, again, we're the ones that are making the decisions on it, and that's what helps me achieve a level of comfort. And, again, the mayor used the Washington Activity Center. I'm perfectly comfortable in supporting that. I think I understand the rationale for that. But there are other decisions in here, or recommendations for us, that I just simply don't know what the reasons for or not. I think that is an essential part of our due diligence, is to understand where the staff is coming from. And I think for the public to understand, this is the rationale that we go through in making the recommendations to council for us to ultimately decide. Thank you, Mayor.
I would like to dispute one thing you said. You said we're the ones that ultimately get the credit or the blame. We love to take the credit, but we are very good at dispersing the blame as best we can.
We had a follow-up meeting. This is the third time we brought it up, and I was under the impression that the second meeting we had was the opportunity for us to try to answer those questions, and maybe we didn't. We left that meeting not hearing any discussion.
I think our challenge is we had a discussion, and I understand where staff was coming from at sort of a higher level. I think that, as I understood it, as it was explained to us, that as Councilmember Kavanaugh said, the staff took an approach educational in purpose. We moved away from bricks and mortar on this round, or we emphasized it. I may be misstating that, but we took a general approach, and I think that was explained, that that's how you approach the overall process. I'm not sure that we got into specific line items as to why this program and not that program and that. Yeah, Councilman Richens.
I have an idea about how to address that, and it maybe not this year, but perhaps next year, because I think the difficulty is going line by line in this meeting on these recommendations. That's challenging, but that may be appropriate in our community and neighborhood services subcommittee to have our subcommittee of three be able to go through and get the explanations. And so we have a mechanism that we're able to ask, get in the weeds on each of these recommendations.
Well, if you recall, after the first meeting, given direction for the council to come and meet with staff, we could meet and go over any concerns that council had. And I think we tried to meet with every member of council that wanted to get that explanation. So if we missed that, I apologize. But that was the order of things we thought. So we had that feedback before that second meeting so that. And then we heard the second meeting, we heard some discussions about fair housing, we heard some discussions about, we were able to talk about the feedback we got from council, we were able to put more money into the senior services area, we moved some money around for the property ownership programs. So along this way, we have been evolving and adjusting. I guess, we were hoping to have that dialogue over the last couple of weeks. We can step back, but... I'm not sure if the question is, do you want us to explain why everyone that wasn't chosen wasn't chosen?
I'm not sure that's it, because as you're talking, I'm thinking our process is sort of set up that we have to digest things pretty quickly in a study session and then make decisions pretty quickly. And I think the first meeting we were presented with the recommendations plus also an overall explanation. And so we're trying to mold the overall approach with specific line items. And that's a little tough because we never have a chance, and that's not neither staff's fault or heads. It's just the way the process has worked this year, where, as Councilmember Richens says, we have somebody that sits down and forget about the overall explanation. Let's go down line item by line item and talk about that. And then what happens is that once this list is out, then, of course, we start getting phone calls, letters, and emails from every individual group on that list, and it creates a bit of confusion, not confusion, but it's certainly not orderly. We'll call it confusion because we're going every which way. So I like the idea of maybe parceling it up a bit, because at this group, it's not really it's just not a good forum to go over line item by line item and get those kind of explanation. It's that's why we have subcommittees. That's why we have subgroups, because it's a better forum for that.
And that would be great. That'd be helpful. I think we ought to do that even before we go out through the process about the priorities of council within these programs, mm-hmm. within the restrictions of CDBG. And because sometimes even the agencies are applying.
Well, we had one agency, for example, that we've been working on for 3 or 4 weeks raising questions, and we finally came to an explanation just in the last few days, literally, that their proposal technically probably wouldn't comply with CDBG, and that I don't know whether we didn't know that or that communication really didn't take place, but that's what the process is for, is to vet those and to make sure that they fit within the program. For this time, though, since we're up against time frames, I would say if individual council members have questions with items, perhaps you could set up a time or a place where we know where you are, you know where we are, where we could talk about those. If there is a significant challenge or whatever, perhaps we could address that on Monday, Mr. Brady?
Sure. Or hopefully before then.
Formally in the meeting.
Right, sure.
Is that okay? Yeah. Councilman Richens?
I still have a couple things that I want to ask about this particular agenda item.
Go right ahead.
They're not necessarily that far in the weeds. I just wanted to comment on Councilmember Summers' comment about the need in reading the consolidated plan. I mean, it illustrates what a huge need we have in all low-income categories, and so the leverage is the key part of that RFP, and I appreciated that. I have a technical question about the public comment period. We're voting on this on May 3rd to approve, yet the public comment period doesn't end until May 10th. How can we approve it before the end of the public comment period is complete?
Let me ask our attorney to come up, who works with CDBG. Or Ray, if you've looked at that timeline,
you can explain it probably a little better than I can.
Mayor, Council, the public comment period is purely one of the ways that they can make comment. And so that's why it's embedded within the 30-day comment period. There's several ways they can make comment, either written through the mail, through email, through our website, or come to make a public comment. So it's basically just another avenue by which they're allowed to make public comments. And so they have until May 10th to send letters in or to do emails.
That kind of makes the public comment period after May 3rd seem pretty useless, doesn't it? Because the plan's approved at that point.
Yes.
So you're going to comment on a completed plan.
But we will still add any comments that come in until May 10th. We put those in the plan.
But they won't have any effect of any changes.
Let's throw something out. Let's say a mass of people show up to comment on one thing and that creates an issue during the public comment period. Can we or would we be able to go back and amend
Absolutely. Okay. We will have it in on the time frame that's required by HUD, and then we can always amend the plan at a later date after it's submitted and after it's approved. It can be amended.
So the May 3rd approval can either be a final approval or a preliminary approval based on the public comment. We could come back on the 17th and change that plan at that time?
Well, it's due to HUD on the 13th.
We need a resolution. We need a resolution going in to submit our plan. However, we have done this in years past when, you know, if there was funds that needed moving or weren't spent, then we come back a month or two later and it can always be amended. Okay. We do a special amendment.
But why don't you explain the public process taking place to date through this process? Where are we right now? Because there's a public hearing as part of this on Monday, so that's part of it. But what have we done to date as far as the public process?
Actually, we have we've had the first public hearing, so we've already had one public hearing on that. And then also we post everything on the website, and that tells them that they can submit through the website, through mail, or through email any comments that they might have. And we would bring those.
And forward. Once again, the proposals have been out there for a month or
right.
whenever
They've
we
been
go.
Out there since March 25th, and then they have been changed through working with council members that we've made alterations. And then they've been reposted every time we've made alterations. So it's been transparent so everyone can see changes being made and that they can make comments as we go along.
Okay, I think maybe next year we just make sure that I think just for appearances for some part of it, and then to encourage public comments that people seem they feel like they're valued, let's make sure that this approval happens after the end of the public comment period. So we just kind of maybe shift our calendar just a little bit. We could do this on the 13th, the morning of the 13th, which is the day it's due to HUD, but that creates kind of a dicey slope to do that because the comment period ends on the 10th. We do have a study session on the 13th.
Well, I think the other thing is if there is an initial public hearing, as part of your presentation to the council, make sure we're aware that there's been a public hearing. And if there are any things that come up, just maybe give an overview of what came up in that public hearing.
Right.
Because like you said, you've had a public hearing. This has been out for a long time. I think maybe we certainly get feedback from those who are affected. I mean, there's not a lack of input, let's say, after the initial list comes out. This is not certainly cloaked in secrecy by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think it's just a matter of getting all the ducks in the order and making sure that it has the appearance that it is an open process. And it is, but I think sometimes I would agree with Councilman Richards, we're missing an opportunity
where
to make that clear.
Where we would run into a problem is we have to have it to HUD on that day. So if we have the thing and we have to add comments, then we have to start making all those copies.
No, we understand.
And drive it down there. And, you know, so it makes it.
Yeah,
we understand.
I understand.
Difficult for
we'll
us.
Tee it up for next year to make sure we get the timing just right. I had one last item.
Go right ahead and then Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I run a nonprofit. I work in a nonprofit. I know how valuable operating funds are, and I do feel a little uncomfortable. We had given some money in our CHOTO to do some housing operations, but we're not giving them the CHOTO set aside, which helps with the operations of those programs. That's an important component when we're working with a nonprofit to be able to deliver programs effectively to the street. I know how important operations dollars are and how valuable they are. We do have that ability within the home program to set aside money for our community-based housing development organization, something like that. I'm trying to get away from the acronym. But I really think we need to make sure that if we're going to give an entity money to do projects, we need to have a little bit of that money that's specifically set aside within the home program to do the operations of that. So if we could find the money to fund the CHOTO set aside, I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Just a question with regard to the public comments that you receive. At what point does the council see those public comments? In what format?
In the past,
I know you see them, but we don't.
In the past, they have just been put in the annual plan, and that is on the website. We can get them to you however you'd like at the end of the comment period, if you'd like it in a special memo, however, whatever means you'd like, we can do that.
And again, council, it's just that's something that's important to me to understand when I'm getting ready to vote on it, to understand, you know, who's written letters, what have they said, what are the concerns that they have raised over the whole comment period. I think that's part of the transparency of the process, is that there should be an effective way to communicate those comments to people who have to push the buttons up here. You see them, but we don't. And so that's just, a concern of mine to make sure the council has complete access to comments from the public and how you've responded, if any, to those comments or revised proposals. Because I know that's why some of the proposals have been revised over the course of the last 60 days due to comments. But again, I think it's helpful for us to understand what the tenor of the comments have been.
I think we've only received, how many comments have we received, Carolyn?
We've received one.
One comment.
Okay. That's important to know, yeah. That you've only received one comment.
Yes.
And I think once again, this year we're sort of up against the time frame. Next year, put on your tickler. Maybe we can revise this by a week or so, and so these things fall into place, so we don't have these issues.
Yeah, appreciate, and we appreciate Councilmember Richens's comment about, you know, having a forum where we could communicate a little more thoroughly through the process.
We appreciate what you do. I understand it's not an easy process. You take all these things. I mean, because there's a lot of very, very worthwhile and worthy projects, causes, whatever they are. I mean, it would be great if we had the funds to take care of them, but we don't. We have to make decisions. We have to make choices. And I know that you go through an exhaustive process, and it's tough. I think it's to your benefit to include us because, you know, the buck does stop here with these seven people. And we do get contacted by those agencies and groups that are affected and impacted. And so the more that you can let us know as early as possible, actually the easier it is for you, because then you don't have us bugging you as much, hopefully. Hopefully that will sort of answer itself. And so if we could do that, I think it would be beneficial to both of us. Okay? Any more questions or comments? Thank you. Yeah, Councilman Richens.
Sorry, Ben, one more thing before I was going to ask. Sorry about that. In reading the annual plan and the five-year consolidated plan, I noticed that we refer a lot to 2000 census data because it's the most current that we have, yet it's terribly uncurrent. At one part in the 3 to 5 year consolidated plan, do we amend that data? It was a lot more thorough plan than I've seen in the past years, which I really appreciated. At what point does that data get updated to reflect?
When we would receive any of this new census data, then we would update that.
And then how do we go about publishing that and approving that with new data sets?
That would come through the same process, because we would go out for the put it out for notice. We would have the hearings on it.
Will that be in 3 years, or would that be next year after we get the census data this year?
Typically, it's 5 years, yeah. But we only do it once every 5 years, typically.
Yeah, I would really like to see that amended earlier. If we're going to plan out for the next 5 years, we can't do this on 2000 data. We need this current census data to be able to determine it a little bit better.
Can we change that, though?
Can we approve it for a year and then come
I don't
bring
know
it back?
It's probably, is that determined by HUD?
I don't know if that's
right.
Our discretion.
It's HUD regulations.
I've not heard of that being done in the past. We can check into it, but typically HUD doesn't want to deal with more than, you know, every 5 years, but I can check into that.
The easy answer is that we follow the regulations. Whatever the regulations dictate, we'll have
ask.
To follow.
We can ask.
Well, yeah, maybe it's something we look at doing internally, too, because a lot of that data sets is very skewed. I mean, it was great because they captured a lot of the current housing market trends and issues that were going on. But all of the demographic stuff, they tried to pull some of the MAG data that with population and stuff as much as they could. But that census data is really key to having a good plan that has good numbers so we can really understand the need. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, everybody fill out your census forms.
That's right. That's why you fill out census forms. Okay.
Are you doing that this year?
On page 3, I have been informed by the applicant on item 6B and going on to page 4, 6C, that that case is being withdrawn for the time. 6A also. So item 6. Yeah, item 6A, B, C. So all of item 6 is off the agenda to come back at some undetermined time, if ever.
Continued or withdrawn? So they have to start over again?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that right, John? I'm just clarifying. It's not a continuance. It's an actual withdrawal.
No. If they're actually withdrawing, then
okay.
It's a tabling. They want it off the agenda, and they'll discuss how they proceed.
But see, I'm just only making the distinction, Mayor, because I'm.
It is not a continuance. No.
Okay. So they would have to start the process over again? I think the neighbors are going to be very interested to know the difference here.
I haven't actually seen it yet. If they are tabling, that's an indefinite continuance. They could pick back up with new notice.
The request was
if they were
table.
Withdrawing, then they would have to start back
the
at square
the request
one.
To me, the confirmation to me in a phone call was to table. Remove it from the agenda and table it. Indefinitely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Is that okay? All right. Councilmember Summers.
I don't know that we're reviewing official terms, so as soon as you get word, can you let me know?
Yes, I'll.
Yes. But what we're saying, though, Mayor and Council, is even with this, we would still have to repost the item again.
Yes.
With all the notes.
Now, the reason why I'm saying I'm not, because we had a long discussion as to whether it was a formal withdrawal or a tabling, and no, we talked about the tabling.
Okay.
So I misspoke at first. My bad.
No, it's fine. We just wanted
to. Sorry to screw things up again.
It's just, we'll be clear to the residents.
Yeah. So it was a tabling indefinitely. Okay. Anything else on page 4? Page 5. Councilmember Fenter.
I just want to make a quick positive comment on 8B. This is the replacement of the road hazard response truck. Had the opportunity to see this in action in District 2. Running an errand, pick up pizza for teenagers. A vehicle had dropped a big plate glass window in the intersection. It was a mess, traffic swerving. Made the call, non-emergency, didn't tell them who I was. By the time I went and got that pizza on a takeout and back, this road, the current road hazard response crew was there, busting their tails to clean up that intersection. What a great service. I was impressed. So really appreciate what happens there, and a good service to the community that I don't think is often recognized. Thank you, Mayor.
Good. Thank you, Councilmember Summers.
Mayor, I'm going to have to step back on item 6, ABC. Uh-huh. Can we leave those on the agenda till Monday, and we'll pull them off Monday once we get the official letter?
So it's clear.
So it's clear, because I don't want to.
Well, it doesn't matter. We'll go over it again on Monday.
Yeah, we'll pull it off Monday once we get the official letter, but I don't want to pull it off here and then not have the option to.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I want to have the options for Monday to either vote on this thing or have it pulled. I don't want to pull it today and then find out.
I'm just thinking about all the interested individuals who may show up if they're still on the agenda.
Okay.
You okay with that? Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Well, let's do this. Whatever we decide to do, I will tell you what has been communicated to me by the zoning attorney last night in a phone call. So however you want to do it technically, just so everyone understands, that is the communication from the applicant last night. Whether we wait till Monday to formally remove from the agenda or not, until we get a letter, I don't really care. But just so everyone's very clear, that's what was communicated.
Mayor, Council members, if we get it in writing today, is that sufficient?
I would be okay with that, but let's discuss it if the mayor is okay with that. Once we get our letter
I'm
today,
I'm trying to figure out what we're discussing here.
I think, if I might add, I think Chris's concern is if we leave it on the agenda, the residents will show up on Monday believing that the council is going to take action. If the mayor has received verbal communication that they want it indefinitely tabled, we can take it off the agenda. But with your concern, Councilmember Summers, what Chris is asking, if we get it in writing from the applicant today that they want it indefinitely tabled, are you comfortable with taking it off the agenda so that the residents know they don't need to show up on Monday?
Yeah, I think Mr. Lake was tied up on travel, as I recall, because he called me as well. Here's my concern. The residents may have concerns that this could suddenly pop back up in 3 weeks or 4 weeks or over the summer or something like that if it's tabled. The question is the difference between tabled and withdrawn if it's tabled indefinitely, what does that mean for the process? Does it what process does it have to go through to get back on this? And we just don't know if they're tabling it or withdrawing it. I think they're tabling it indefinitely. But I don't want the appearance that this is some kind of legal maneuver in order to avoid citizen participation.
That's a great point, because I recall, I think it was this case, the council made a comment about, too, not having this show up in the middle of the summer and concerned
about
it.
Yeah, I did. So did Councilmember
Tanner. I don't know how we manage that. You know, if it,
here's the deal. Frankly, and I will say, I understand what's going on, but this is not our property. This is a request by a property owner. We have processes in place, notification, scheduling, other things that go hand in hand with a zoning case. We do not run zoning cases. We respond to property owners' requests for zoning cases, and we make sure that they follow the appropriate rules, which we have set up and which state law sets up to require notification, posting, processing, those kind of things. On the other hand, I don't want to get too cute on our end and try to manage a zoning case, which is not our zoning case. It's the property owner's zoning case. So, the fact of the matter is, if this property owner wants to table it, and if that is what our rules allow, then they can table it.
Can they table it?
But if that's what our rules allow. If there is not something, if that is not within our rules, then we need to find out what within our rules.
Well, actually, obviously, the council gets to decide what's on the agenda and what's not on the agenda. So the applicant cannot dictate that it come on or be placed on the agenda. But let me ask John.
I agree with you from a technical standpoint. However, I want to be very clear that I would not support a council ramming through a zoning case contrary to a property owner's desires. On the other hand, I get it where we don't want to set it up to where the property owner gets an undue advantage over neighbors or whatever. I completely agree with Councilmember Summers. So let's just make sure that we balance
right. And I think what I would ask John to maybe explain for Councilmember Summers is the posting process and what amount of time would be needed. So when the applicant comes back and says, okay, now we would like to move forward and place this on the agenda, what time span would that entail and what type of posting would it include?
Right. And that's what I want to know. I don't want to be the unwitting lackey to some kind of political maneuvering in order to eliminate 200 people.
Let's be clear. Per the charter, agendas are set by three ways. Mr. Brady, the mayor, or three council members. Not an applicant, and not the zoning department, or not anything. Not the neighbors. So I think if we're talking about agendizing, I don't, as mayor, the one who can set an agenda with Mr. Brady setting it, I don't think there's going to be an issue with the agenda on this item. I will tell you, if the applicant has told me that he wants to table, I don't care what they say on Monday, it's going to be off the agenda on Monday, as of now, because that's what the applicant told me, letter or no letter. And if three council members want to put on the agenda, which I don't think is going to happen in this zoning case, then that's fine. If Mr. Brady wants to put it back on, he and I will have a discussion, which I don't think is going to happen. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying, but I would say that the system is in place to hopefully avoid the kind of maneuvering that we have, especially in this case, where we have a representation from the applicant, and it's very clear as to what they want to do. And even if they wanted to change, to me, they've told me it's off. So
I just could Mr. Wesley explain
the difference?
No, what
the posting? No,
yeah,
posting.
What Debbie asked me.
Yes, Mayor and Council, if this gets tabled on Monday, which it sounds like it will be, then to come back onto an agenda, first thing that we'll have to do is meet all the notice requirements as if it were a new case to get back onto the agenda, which is the minimum 15 days posting and the mailed notice again to all the property owners. Given all the history in this case, we would want them to update their citizen participation plan and go through at least some process that way. And also, given the council's discussion about not wanting this to come back in the summer, they want it to come back sometime after people have been through the summer and got back into things. I can't see us getting it on agenda until September at least, if they want to.
Well, and even if they decided they wanted to go out and post it and whatever, it still has to be put on an agenda.
That's correct.
And that gets into the way that we put things on agenda. Right. So, for example, to avoid that, we can tell right now the applicant it's not coming back during the summer.
Right.
You know, that's if you've decided to table it right now, then there's a real concern with the council member. I think a valid concern, valid concern of the neighbors. I don't think that's the intent, but let's say, let's just err on the side of it not being being possible. Then we can just say, hey, listen, if you're going to table it, here's the conditions under which we'll bring it, we'll allow it to be brought back.
That, I like.
Is that okay?
That I like.
Okay.
We'll lay out some conditions.
I think that's just clarification.
Yeah, because I'm concerned with the Monday thing and having people show up and then decide when I think we can decide it right now. And even if the applicant came to me tomorrow and said, no, we want it on, as mayor, my thing is, no, we pulled it.
Right.
We'll have to go again. Because that's what I was formally informed.
Okay.
Last night.
The
Councilmember Richards.
Okay. Just a technical question. If we wanted to leave this on and vote on it, could we? I'm trying to understand how the agenda, even though the applicant wants to pull it, it's been working its way through the agenda. It's worked its way through the process. It's gotten to agenda, even though he may not want to have it heard. Could we leave it on and hear it and vote on it and have resolution?
If the application, and John, correct me if you disagree, but if the application is complete, it's gone through the process, yes, you could. The applicant, I don't believe, can pull it just because he doesn't think he has the votes to.
Applicant cannot withdraw a zoning application.
He can withdraw it, but withdrawing it means I'm ending.
Right, right.
Tabling it, no. I would say the council has the control over the agenda again. So I think the council has control over the agenda. So if he's just requesting
in our zoning code, there is a submittal and there is a withdrawal.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a tabling. Mm-hmm. A tabling is something they work with us as far as agendizing.
Right.
Correct? One reason why they ask us to table or give an indefinite continuance is so they don't have to refile. They have to repost. They have to fit all those types of things for notice, but they don't have to refile.
Correct.
Okay, so let's be clear that's the intent of the applicant, which means they may decide they want to bring it back. But they're saying, listen, if we want to bring it back, we don't have to pay all the fees and go through all the, as if we're starting fresh because we've already gone down that path. But that does not affect the notification, and we could still require them to go through that anyway because it's an agenda item now. And we could say, listen, to get back on the agenda, here's what you're going to require.
They would, under state statute, have to go through the posting process again.
Exactly.
And the notification.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, that, Mayor, is where I'd like to see is that they would have to go through the posting and
right.
the meetings and all that.
Absolutely.
Skipping the fees.
Well, that's the only thing they would skip.
I think that's where we're still agreeable. That
yes.
If we can write that
by
in,
tabling,
I would be fine.
Well, by tabling it, that's what we're doing. They won't have to go through the entire process and pay the fees and go to planning and zoning again. They are at the point that they are right now, waiting for council decision. They're simply, it's being removed from the agenda. But to get back on the agenda, under state statute and our code, they have to do the public participation and the notification process again.
So, Mayor and Council, because I know there's a lot of interested groups out there about on this particular case, if that's the will of the council to do the tabling, the staff will reach out to the community immediately and try, explain the fact that there will have to be the public participation process, the notice, so that they understand that. If that's where council's headed with this.
I guess another issue I had with what Debbie just said is it makes it easier just to move this project right through. And I think what the neighborhood would like to see is a different project. If it changes, then it has to go back through zoning, P&Z for approval.
Let's get back to what I said. The neighbors don't own this property. This is not mm-hmm. their zoning case. They have a very, very clear vested interest in the zoning case, mm-hmm. but this is not their zoning case. And so neighbors don't decide when zoning cases are filed, and we don't decide when they're the property owner. That's what property rights are all about. So I appreciate that, but I think as long as the neighbors are given adequate notice, which our state statutes provide for, our city ordinances provide for, that's even before we get to the agenda setting. Now that we're on notice, we've had this discussion, Mr. Brady and I both know what the will of the council is. Those are going to be additional requirements to make sure that everything's taken care of before we will agendize them, because we don't have to agendize something just because the applicant wants it back on the agenda.
You know, that well,
that's right, we don't have to take it off. The thing is that I'm not in support of pushing something through that an applicant doesn't want either. It's his property, and the applicant is the one that requested this zoning. It's gone through a public process. It's gone through P&Z. People have been heard. It's not like anyone's being shut out. And I am absolutely confident there's not going to be any Saturday night specials that all of a sudden this shows up on an agenda.
First of all, state statute and city ordinance don't allow that. Secondly, I think it's pretty clear what this council would rally, and believe me, Mr. Brady and I will be following that, and if three members of the council disagree with it, I don't think they will, then the agenda can be changed that way. So I think where we're setting it, it'll be tabled, not to reappear anytime in the near future, certainly not in a summertime when people will be away, and that will ensure that state statute and city ordinances as far as neighborhood notification, and understanding that this is a contentious zoning case. Mr. Wesley, I'm sure, will reach out to those groups who have contacted you, let them know what's going on, explain to them the process, so they are very much, very well aware of what's going on. Is that okay?
It's still on until we hear from them later.
It's in writing. You want it in writing, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, before we pull it.
Does it text out?
Before we table it.
Before we table it.
To use the same language before we decide to table it.
I know, I'm just
being
very clear because it can mean we get it. The difference between tabling and withdrawing, there's differences there. So, yes.
Get something in writing, but it's not going to be on the agenda. Okay. So, but get something in writing. I'm sure Mr. Lake will give us something in writing.
Okay.
But even if he doesn't, I'm pulling it.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. So, thank you, though. That's a good discussion. Anything else on page 5? Page 6? Page 7? Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, item 10G. Let me flip over there. In item 10G, is there anyone here to speak to item 10G? Is it Natalie? Or no? Trish?
Trish.
Trish is looking behind her.
I'm looking for help.
It's easy. All right.
Trish, if you'd like, we can table this item also.
No. No, that's all right.
That's too confusing. Okay.
Second.
I'll bail you out of this.
Okay, so my question is, we are renting a city building to the DMA for $1 a year. I want to know, is there any restrictions or I didn't read anything that said what they're going to do with the savings? Because DMA is saving $35, $40, I'll just throw out a number, $1,000 a year by renting our building for a buck. So is that just extra cash in your thing? Are we reducing what we normally give you by $40,000?
No, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to take those savings. Excuse me. Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're going to take those funds and we will recontribute them back to the community and special events and so forth, is that we've dedicated those dollars. They will be strictly for events for the community.
Now, is that something we're following up on? No offense. But, I mean, is that in writing so we know that? Are you, like, laying out with that $40,000 we're going to give you 20 events this year? Or?
There's nothing in writing, but we will be following up on that. We will be monitoring it because we do part. We do.
I would suggest that's something that we've had this conversation for months,
right,
about this option about being able to save the dollars and the current rental and then being able to shift them with some. I think there were some other savings, too, that were going to help supplement being able to pick up more special events. And really, we manage that through the contracts and the budget adoption we do with them. So it really would fit inside this lease of the building.
Okay.
But when we talk about the budget, that's really where we see that coming.
I just wanted to be clear because I've had some emails of how come we're giving something for nothing, but in reality there's going to be a savings and we're going to get some for it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's right. And
it'll be in the contract as City Manager Brady said, is that it won't be in the lease contract per se, but it will be in the contract for...
So we'll be following up on that.
Yes, absolutely. And just to be, so the council understand, we're fairly consistent, you know, both the Chamber of Commerce and the Convention and Visitors Bureau get pretty close to the same deal. So this is, and actually putting this DMA close in that complex actually, I think, works well for us.
Thank you very much.
That it?
Councilman Fenter.
I was just going to say I'm looking forward to my meeting later this morning to get more of those particulars on this issue, so thank you.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Thank you. Anything else? You got something, Councilman Hinkins?
No, just next page. I'll wait.
Oh, next page? You'll wait. Okay, page 9. Oh, you want to go to page 8, huh?
No.
Page 8.
Mayor, item 10H.
10H.
It's a road project thing. Anybody? Mm-hmm. I see Clevenger there. Come on, guys. Chris, engineering, anybody?
Maybe. I think Ms. Solanka's got this one.
Question I have is what we're asking, we're letting the developer push back when they start the road improvements based on some more, instead of 500 building permits, 550. Now, where did that number come from in the first place? Is it based on something? Was it arbitrary? And if it was arbitrary, then it doesn't matter. But if it was based on something, does that make a difference?
Actually, it was based on something.
Okay.
When we first started talking with Mountain Bridge, because the development there is going to extend over several years, we worked initially on the development agreement with transportation and with engineering. And really, I won't speak for Alan, but I'll go ahead and start.
But I always do.
It was really an issue of when transportation would need those roads improved based on the traffic volume. Obviously, with the economic condition, development has slowed at Mountain Bridge, and so the developer came back and said, okay, we're not building at the same rate we thought we were. We sat down with Alan a couple of months ago, and he agreed that the improvements could be delayed a little bit.
But the improvements are based on building permits. So what I don't get, it's not like development slowed. It's based on a fact. It's not a rate kind of thing. So I don't know why. You know what I'm saying? Why the delaying of it, based on your explanation, doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry, not to be. Because you're saying development is slowed. Well, it was based on building permits. Well, if you aren't building the houses, then it's obvious you don't have to build the road because you said the road has to go when you have 500 building permits. Mm-hmm. But if you're not building, well, then obviously you're not building the road. So to use that explanation doesn't make sense to me. But and to make it now 550 doesn't mean building slowing. You're saying we're going to let you build more houses until you have to do the road improvements.
If I could maybe clarify.
Yeah. Hey, Alan, just say it was arbitrary. I think you'll get a I think we'll save a lot of time if it just becomes arbitrary.
The number of building permits was somewhat arbitrary. But actually, there's another aspect to it. It was so many building permits or this phase or that phase, and that was based on where they were physically located.
Okay.
With respect to the adjacent arterial streets.
Okay.
And frankly, what they've done is they've shrunken?
Shrunk.
They've made their phases.
I think it's shrunken. That's shrinken. All right.
Shrunk.
Well, let me rewind. They've made their phases smaller. In the original plan, they may have had an area that was a phase where they've made that into perhaps two phases now. So it's not only the number of building permits, it's physically where those homes are located. Are they adjacent to the street? And they've split it up. For example, they moved ahead with their clubhouse, but not the entire phase of homes around their clubhouse, so they built the road up to their clubhouse. Sometimes what they have to do, they have to build additional temporary emergency access points based on where they are physically in the development.
So it is arbitrary, because if you're... I mean, I'm assuming you
would. Wait, that arbitrary thing, that was a joke, because I don't think it really is arbitrary. If I could restate it real quickly. So what you're saying is that in the original plan, and I don't know if this is true, but let's say they anticipated building their clubhouse as part of a phase 3 or phase 4, whatever it is, and therefore, if you built the clubhouse with that phase, then the road would be necessary. Because they did change and they're building the club, and that's why we required them to
right.
build the road in
right.
the development agreement. If the clubhouse is being built, but it's being built without phase 3, then you've satisfied a portion of what they were going to do. But now phase 3, which anticipated a need for a road, is not going to be built. So why build the road?
Right.
Is that an accurate way of rephrasing that?
I think it is. And another example is, say they're building the parcel that's the southwest corner of McKellops and Ellsworth. They have to do the McKellops portion and the Ellsworth portion because it's physically adjacent to that. And if they've now decided, well, we're not going to build all of that, we're only going to build the next step is going to be smaller, we're not actually going out to Ellsworth in that area or out to McKellops in that area, they're not going to build that adjacent to it. Frankly, the number of permits was a backstop in that so that they couldn't basically build everything except what's adjacent to the road and not have the major roads done.
Okay.
So the idea behind the it was originally, when you do this phase, it was based on you have to build all the roads adjacent to that phase, and wanted to make sure that they couldn't in fact build everything except a strip along the major roads and have all these people in here and not have the major roads done. So the number of permits was a backstop to the physical.
So that was a little bit of arbitrary at the end. But, I mean, you did come up with that number based on traffic counts and what size road you felt was needed to act, or not really.
It was a relationship that we worked out.
It wasn't a precise
nothing's precise, but you have two things that determine. So it's right. So people don't think it's arbitrary, because it's not arbitrary.
Right. You're right.
Number one is, if you have people living there, you need roads.
Right.
And that's where the permits come in.
Yes.
If you have development in anticipation of people coming in, you want to be proactive and build before the people get there if you can. So if
right.
development activities happen, you're going to finish the roadway so that when people come, you're not playing catch up.
Right.
So really you use the word backstop. Really it's a two-pronged test.
That's correct.
You either have development in anticipation of people, finish the roads, or you have people without development, finish the roads.
Right.
Okay.
And the reality, I think, Mayor and Council, the reality is the staff is like demonstrating our flexibility to work with in a reasonable way with a developer. It says times have changed, the development timing and it has changed, and so we're willing to sit back down with them and kind of reorder things and look at the commitments. Now, we're not allowing them to get out of any commitments. It's just the timing of the commitments right. and when they would happen.
So the idea that at the end of the day, we're going to have roads commensurate with the demand.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Is that it? Thank you, Councilman Higgins, and thank you. Okay, anything else on page 8? Councilmember Summers.
Sorry, 11C. John, just 11C, I read through it, and it seems this is for the case of a construction yard. I think it's concrete barricades, prefabricated. They run out or something. The only concern I have is the proximity to a residential neighborhood. Were all those residences notified? They all within 1,000 feet?
Yes, they were all notified. And those residences are, I guess I'd have to check the map to be sure, but certainly the majority of them, not all of them, are areas that have been rezoned to an industrial district because of concern about residential in the area a few years ago, but the residential use was there. So the intent is over time to change all of them to non-residential.
All of these lots in this yes. in this area are going to go to non-residential use. How much noise do we anticipate off of this project? And what have we done to try to buffer some of that? I keep thinking of the zoning case, and I think it's in Dina's district that has, they put a commercial across the canal from a residential, and that is a, yeah, and I can see the face on some staff members. It's a continuing, ongoing issue with noise and other environmental displeasures.
As the type of use that it is, it will have obviously some noise associated with it. Again, nobody in the area through the public participation process has brought that up as a concern.
Okay. We'll leave it on for now.
Is that it? Okay. Page 9. Thank you very much. Item number 2 on the agenda is to hear a presentation to discuss the Central Mesa Light Rail Transit Extension Project and Stakeholder Advisory Committee input. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yes, it is, Mayor.
So I think the title is going to last longer than the presentation.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Because of that, I won't restate the title of what we're talking about today, but I would like to introduce our panel here today. We're pleased to have the Chief Executive Officer of Metro, Steve Manta, here today. We have the Program Development Director, Wolf Grote, and we have our Metro Corridor Project Manager, Mark Sorensen. And with that, because of time, I want to have Steve Manta kick off this presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of Council. First of all, thank you for having me here today to talk to you about this most important project, and also just give you a brief outline of my experience and who I am. As said, I am the Chief Executive Officer of Mesa. I start our Metro, and I started.
Mr. Brady was ready and willing to hand it over to you.
Start over, Chief Executive Officer of Metro, started January 19th of this year. First of all, my experience has been about 25 years, starting fixing rail cars early on in my career, transitioning through seven different transit properties. Now, before your mind wanders, I can keep a job. Those transitions were for increased responsibility, larger transit properties, interesting opportunities for myself and my family. So I'm glad to be here in the Valley. Transportation in the Valley is in its infancy. I'm hoping through this operation here in the Valley to extend our system further into Mesa. As you all know, our number one boarding station is Sycamore, and it can only grow in ridership as we expand further into the heart of your city. I truly believe that transportation and our light rail system is the gateway to your community, and we will work with you and the community to develop a system and advance it in a way that meets everybody's objectives. My first challenge here at Metro is to transition the organization from a constructor to an operator of quality service. I think what we do in public transit is we connect people to life, and we need to focus clearly on the customer when we think about all the decisions that affect our organization. And finally, I would like to recognize and thank Vice Mayor, our board member, Jones, for spearheading the Stakeholders Advisory Committee here in Mesa. It was a large group, truth be told. We were probably concerned a little bit about the numbers of people that were participating in the beginning, but it was facilitated very well, and it was embraced in the community and the stakeholders in what we were trying to do and what they were trying to do, and I think that makes for a better project. I do apologize in advance. I have to leave before this presentation is over. I'm meeting with the Federal Transit Administration at the O&M facility to review a safety and security audit for us. But I will be glad to answer any questions that any of you might have for me.
Any questions, Steve? Thank you. And sorry you have to leave, but we're thank you for being here. And hope this is the first of many, because that means fun things will be happening.
I appreciate that. I will be, as evidenced by my limp on the way out, I have been doing everything I can to kick this project across the threshold into project development. And today with the FTA is one more step in that process. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll like to keep going. The last several weeks, we've been out in the community at several boards, community meetings, events, public meeting, and we always like to start out emphasizing that this project really runs the gamut of every strategic initiative intention that you guys have brought forward as a new council and as a body. Light rail is certainly an economic generator. It is brought in our community together. It's going to improve the quality of life. Obviously, what you've seen with Steve and the project, we're bringing regional leadership in transit, and it's also an opportunity to, through economic development, improve our financial stance. In addition to that, we continue to work as a team, a downtown focus team that's focused on economic development with bringing in light rail, working on a central Main Street area plan, looking at form-based codes, programming more events, as we talked about this morning, and updating our zoning code. So we've got a full program to move this process and this project forward. As a quick reminder, we've been working on our high-capacity transit alternatives analysis for the last 2 years. Last May, you approved a locally preferred alternative, light rail down Main Street. I don't need to go over that. If we go to the next slide, you'll see the map that you've approved, our locally preferred alternative, with light rail running on Main Street to just past Mesa Drive, and a future but unfunded extension to Gilbert Road. That's where we are today, the kind of the background, and at this time I'd like to hand it over to Wolf Grote to talk about the Mesa project and our update with our stakeholders. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Mayor Smith, members of council, the project, as Mike has described, is moving forward very well. We've had an excellent process over the last year. From here on out, we're moving towards an opening date for this project, still in 2016, as we've been talking about for some time now. And if all goes well, we'll be in design this summer, roughly in July. We have, over the past few months, actually since last summer, we've spent a significant amount of time on a technical level as well as on a community level, trying to further define the project for this light rail program. And really, there's a whole list of things that we've been looking at, but really the two key things that we've focused the most on over the last few months is, one, where are the stations going to be, and secondly, really understanding better what the configuration of the street is going to be, primarily in the downtown, but all the way through the entire segment as well. And there's a number of other issues we've also been touching on, but those really have been our primary two focuses. As has also been mentioned, we've worked very closely with a fairly large stakeholder advisory committee over the past several months. They completed their work this past month under the direction of the vice mayor. Again, an excellent job there in leading that group, and actually we got very good input from that group. Even though, as Steve mentioned earlier, we thought the group maybe to be a little unwieldy at the beginning because of the size, but actually it worked out to be a very good group. We got excellent input, and I think reached some really good decisions with the input from these folks. The community process is continuing over this next month, and we'll touch on that a little bit more in a moment. But bottom line here is the recommendations that we are making as staff moving forward with the input from the community is four stations. The first of those stations would be immediately west of Alma School. And then the next station is really in the downtown area, is a station immediately east of Country Club, a station immediately east of Center, and then finally a station immediately east of Mesa Drive. The station that would be at Mesa Drive also includes a park and ride facility at that location. We expect a demand of roughly 500 vehicles to be at least on the initial segment to be there at that location. And we're still working at this point on defining the site for that park and ride. That's not part of the recommendation we're going to be talking about here. We also, as I mentioned, had a lot of emphasis on the configuration of the street, and we have two different configurations. West of Country Club, we are continuing the same configuration that we have in the existing light rail alignment, and that is to include two tracks in the middle of the street. We would have two through lanes of automobile traffic going on each side of that, with left turn lanes where appropriate and where necessary. We will also continue with the bike lane throughout this area. In order to save on impacts to the right-of-way, to the properties, we will not continue with on-street parking, as we also did not on the west end of our current line, in an effort, again, to keep the curbs as close to the existing location as possible. As we get into the downtown area, the issues are a little bit different. You know, we recognize that downtown is a pedestrian space. We recognize that there is the parking in downtown is also important to the merchants. And therefore, we, in developing the downtown solution, we tried to maintain the existing curb location throughout the downtown area. And as a result of that, what we're recommending is, again, two tracks in the middle. We would have a left turn lane, pretty much where left turn lanes exist today, and there would be a through lane in each direction, just a single through lane in each direction going through the downtown. There was quite a bit of discussion about this. We actually looked at a two-lane section going through as well, or two-lane in each direction, and I think it was pretty much unanimous by the advisory committee that we worked with that the one-lane section worked better for us. We also will continue with parking. There will no longer be a bike lane that will be separated in the downtown. However, bikes, because of the slow-moving traffic through the downtown, we envision that bikes, as is done in other cities, that bikes can share the lane with automobiles, and if people feel uncomfortable with that, First Avenue or First Street are reasonable options for bicyclists.
Yeah, Councilmember Richens.
Yeah. Help me understand that 9-foot median that shows on there, what the functionality and purpose of that is.
Yeah, in some cases, that space is used for left turn lane. Wherever there are intersections that exist today, that space will be used for left turn lanes. In areas where there's not a need for left turn lane, right now the recommendation is at staff level to include some landscaping in that area. If for any reason in the future, long term, there's a desire to change the configuration of the street, you could accommodate two through lanes, but you would no longer be able to do a left turn lane.
Without disturbing the curbs.
Without disturbing the curbs, exactly.
Or the left turn lane, the through lane would be a dual use. You'd have
exactly.
A through lane until you hit the intersection, then it would be a left turn lane. And that, I know, was kicked around. But the idea is that actually creates more of a traffic backup than just having a single lane, because now you have cars thinking they're going to be through, and then they get stopped.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct.
Okay. Councilmember Cavanaugh.
I have a question again on the bicycle lanes. I was at the open house Saturday on Main Street, and while I was standing there, saw probably 45 to 50 bicyclists go by on Main Street. And I'm just curious what, if any, are the plans at this point in terms of signage or directions to cyclists to either let them know that they can continue along and to share the lane, or providing other options to them to do either?
Yes, thank you, Mayor, Councilmember Cavanaugh. We are looking as part of, in addition to the business outreach, but also part of the design, comprehensive wayfinding. We know that's going to be important for bicycles, because while there are some people who will feel comfortable riding their bicycle with traffic in that travel lane, there's going to be others who are not. So we want to make sure that at Morris, at some of the other roads, we can turn them south to First Avenue, let them know that we will have the bike lanes on those other facilities, or if some of the pedestrian throughways where we can get back to Pepper, or some of those that we identify where some of those areas are. Right now, we do have signage for parking behind buildings and those types of things, but it's not as visible as I think we would all like. So I think that's part of the design and wayfinding, as well as a part of our business outreach in making sure people understand how to get through and divert if they want to get around the main street on their bicycle.
Thank you. Well, okay. One question to follow up on Councilmember Richens. The landscaping in that median, you're not looking for big trees or things like that. You're looking for low level, ground level shrubbery, ground cover, things like that, correct?
That's correct, Mayor. If you are familiar with Veterans Drive, or what used to be called Stadium Drive in Tempe, they have a 5-foot landscape median just on the outside of the trackway. We're looking at something similar to that, where you can have a nice landscaping with some color and some good urban design elements that really delineate that trackway.
The idea is to, right now, one of the things that we hear that people enjoy about Main Street is that you do have a landscape median. It adds some, breaks up, takes away just the asphalt and concrete, and this would be the idea for this also, is to create some diversity and other things along that road, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Could I continue? So aside from the street configuration, there are a number of other issues that we're also still working on. One of those is that we do need to locate 3 traction power substations to power our vehicles. Those locations we've looked at preliminarily. However, final recommendations will be made during preliminary engineering. We really need to do a power load analysis that the engineers will need to do to really define the best spacing to maximize the performance of this operation. So while we have talked about it, it's not something that we've reached final conclusion on. So we'll be continuing to talk about that in the next few months. The project overall, The forecast for ridership for this line is just under 5,000 additional riders in the first year of operation, when we extend this operation. The cost, and this is the cost that we've taken forward to the Federal Transit Administration, is $198 million. And that is, I should make note here, is that there are no city funds involved in the capital cost of this project. 40% of the money comes from the regional sales tax, Proposition 400, and the other 60% is through a couple of different sources at the federal level. One of those is the federal, what's called the Federal Small Starts Program, which is the discretionary program that we're pursuing for $75 million. And that process is actually going fairly well. I will make a note that although there is no capital cost for the city, there will be an operating expense that will be shared with Farebox revenue and city. And it's going to be roughly about $3.5 million a year that will cost the city.
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. Are the Prop 400 funds sweepable? I mean, can one day those be gone? Or like the LTAF money, that type of thing?
No.
No, Mayor, it's a, you know.
Mayor Smith, Councilmember Higgins, I don't know if they're sweepable or not. That's probably a legal question, but I do know that the each year we look very closely at we're required by the law to update the forecast of revenues and to look at the expenditures. And we just finished a process just last week at Metro to update our life cycle program. And this project is still solid in its funding moving forward.
Mr. Butler.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, the short answer is no. I mean, there's a detailed, as Wolf said, legal reason why, but primarily because it's not a state assessment. It is a county tax that's collected and administered by Maricopa County. Within the confines of Maricopa County, the state doesn't.
County can sweep them, though.
there's other legal protections from
great.
And Debbie looks like she may have some to add to that, but it's not anything that we've,
you know, just a little paranoid.
Yeah, and I would just add that this was voted on by the people, so it has additional protections than just a normal law that would be adopted by the legislature or the county.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And Scott, to that point, do the Prop 400 monies have more protection than the county library district monies? Because as I understand, last year the supervisors swept 30% of those monies for operation or administrative costs unrelated to the library. So this isn't, they can't do that to this money, can they?
That's correct. And Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, I'll be glad to, at some point, to really bore you, come back with the cash flow of how it actually moves. But there's not the, this doesn't run through the Board of Supervisors in the same manner in which the county library assessment does. And it's, The collection method also allows for more security in which the funds are allocated.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Well, finally, just the last slide here. Just to tell you what's coming up, where we're going from here. We are in the midst of preparing an environmental document. We'll be working on the environmental assessment, really finalizing that late this year. That actually, when that assessment gets completed, that allows us to move into a couple of steps here. One is that we can start utility relocations. We have a pre-award authority from the federal government that we could start utility relocations anytime after that, and we're also any land acquisition that would have to occur could start immediately after that as well. And that's pretty small in this case, in this project. We also are moving forward with approval for project development through the Federal Transit Administration. We had hoped by now to be able to tell you that they have approved that, but as usual, federal processes usually take longer than you anticipate, so we're still working to finalize that step. And once we have that, we can then award a contract to our engineering contractor, by way, who has been selected at this point. But once we have that approval from the federal government, we can award that contract so that we don't jeopardize potential federal funds. But we anticipate that would still happen here in June. If anything different happens, we'll let you know. But we also, in the meantime, we will continue with the public process over the next month, talking about some of the decisions that we've made, and we anticipate coming back to you on May 17th with a recommendation and an action for the station locations and the street configuration for this project.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Any other questions? Vice Mayor.
Well, no questions, but comment. I want to thank everyone for their help, the staff that worked so hard, but I want to thank all the committee members on the advisory, the stakeholders committee, because it was really a very good experience. A lot of information shared, We had great discussion, and it was important, too, in that process that when we asked them for their input, I even made it a point that they had a secret ballot, so to speak, to give their input so they weren't influenced by other people of where they thought stations should be and the lane configurations and so forth. So they had a chance to privately give us their input, and that was critical to me to get that input. And so I want to thank all the committee members for the work they did and staff. And it was important as we went through all the fundamental information and the criteria of making those selections. There were some assumptions right up front, one of them being we know that wherever light rail goes is going to have a significant economic impact. Wherever that station is, there's going to be tremendous benefit to the immediate area surrounding that station, and that was considered, along with connecting with bus routes and minimizing impact on property owners and so forth. So my hat goes off to all those participated because it was a good experience.
Thank you. Yeah. And I would like to add my voice to that. First of all, I'd like to thank the Vice Mayor, who I thought did an incredible job of bringing together a diverse group who, and I remember when we named this committee, we talked about, do we limit the number or do we just open it up? And we sort of, to anyone, to all comers. And we sort of rolled the dice and said, we'll let Kyle deal with that. And he did a great job. And actually, it turned out to be a very, very, I'd like to say it was a wise decision, but really it was, we just took a chance to invite anybody who wanted to participate to be a formal member of the committee. And as it turned out, it was a great experience. So my hat's off to Vice Mayor Jones for doing that, and to staff also. I think the thing that really was, to me, was, was made me feel good about the process is I know that when we first started, having talked to a lot of members of the committee, that there was a wide variety and diversity of opinions. A lot of these people fought against light rail coming downtown to begin with. And when when this council decided on Main Street as the preferred alternative, and I can't believe it's been a year since we made that decision. That's been amazing. They showed up, they voiced their opinions, and what was really incredible was at the end of the day, some of the decisions that you told us about were nearly unanimous. The initial feeling is, they were railroaded. I know members of this group, and railroaded, that was an unintended pun. But I can tell you, knowing members of the group and talking to them, there are members that will not be backed into a corner. See, I didn't even use the railroaded thing again. And yet they asked the right questions. They were given multiple options, and the secret ballots that the Vice Mayor talks about had pictures and diagrams, and I think a paragraph on the back. In one case, on some of these station locations, they had upwards, how many alternatives did they have to choose from on sometimes? It was multiple locations.
Six
on one location, and yet you saw where, I think on one thing, it was like only out of 25, give or take one or two votes, like 24 voted for the same location. Which where they started, which was clear out here to come together, tells me that it was a good process. And everyone that I've talked to felt that their voices were heard and that they were able to ask the right questions and get answers. So I appreciate that. Thank you so very much. And thanks once again, Vice Mayor. Okay, any other questions of the group?
So, Mayor and Council, just some clarification. Right now, we're anticipating we're going to be seeking a council resolution to support not the alignment, necessarily, the station locations.
Station locations.
Is there, we have till the 17th, the 13th would be the next study session. Is there any need for follow-up or additional discussion the council would like before then? Would you like to just go ahead and just put on the agenda for the 17th as we move forward? We wanted to come to council early enough now in case there was that, any additional discussion information council sought.
Vice Mayor?
Has each council member had an opportunity to see the full layout of how those stations fall in? are we going to have a presentation, or are you going to just speak with everybody individually? Because it's a big...
Oh, the full rollout, yes.
Big rollout and more detailed.
Yes, we did our briefings. We brought that along with to each of the council districts.
Well, and if you want to go down to the... maybe we could have a time where, once again, you open up again today, or was just yesterday?
No, we did yesterday. We can open it up. We've got the rollout plans.
Maybe between now and the 13th, we'll do another opportunity.
Okay. We're talking about the storefront there.
Right. 18 West Main.
18 West Main.
Okay.
Where it's, you know, it's a little bit more to scale. It's not to scale. It actually is to scale.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a pretty long table there that has everything. It's not like this where you have a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. It's much more. You can get a better feel of how things relate. See, that's what it means to be to scale. I know my scales. My scale in my bathroom, obviously wrong. You know, it's way off. Councilmember Finter.
You know, those couple of pieces of the puzzle that you mentioned are down the road, the location of the power stations, the park and ride, some pretty big issues related to this. I know we're kind of narrowly defining the train stations, but those have an impact on where those... So it would be nice to get some information, but I'm not trying to stop the process and just kind of understand how that works.
And I appreciate that. I will tell you one of the concerns I have that I've expressed is, and we'll have talked about this, is that we're planning on 500 parking spaces at the end of the line. Today we have how many at Sycamore?
800.
Two.
Yeah. So... I'm being real cautious about whether 500 is going to be enough. So it's just something we have to think about, but certainly planning for 500 spaces at the end of the line state. Well, we don't want to call it the temporary end of the line. I'm not sure what the term we're using for, because we certainly want this to keep going, but for at least some period of time. So, yes, that idea, the park and ride with the 500 spaces plus finding a location for these power
substations
will be something that'll be important for us to look at. But
I only have one request that just hit me, and this was a request that came up from a constituent, and I think they make a good point. It's not a game changer. Please name the stations to something that's near, not where it is. I mean, I love Sycamore, but nobody knows where Sycamore is. It would have been great if that would have been the Dobson Road. I mean, everybody knows where Dobson Road is. As we go through, I like Alma School, Country Club, Center Street, and Mesa Drive, or Temple, or, you know, downtown Mesa, whatever it is. Just put that in your notes for consideration.
Yeah. Mayor Smith, may I make one more remark?
Yeah. No.
Just no.
Never ask.
Of course you can.
Mayor, I, members of the council, I just wanted to say that, you know, obviously we're doing a public process right now leading up to some significant decisions that we'll bring back here in May. But our public process doesn't stop there. You know, we're going to be heading into preliminary engineering, and there are several decisions that have to be made, some of which I brought up today. We're going to be talking about station design. We're going to be talking about art. We're going to be talking about business assistance. You know, there's a lot of things that will be...
Construction timing, which all is, those is things an ongoing... We'll that's the number one question I get.
So we will continue to develop a public program for the next phase, what we call our preliminary engineering phase of the project, that will go through the end of this calendar year. So you'll see more of us.
And Councilman Richards wants to be deeply involved in the landscape design in those medians through Main Street, right? Okay. Councilman Richards.
Actually, I wouldn't mind if we could have a Transportation and Infrastructure Committee meeting. I believe Kyle's on that committee, as well as Councilmember Finter. To have a meeting that we could really get in the weeds to put the big picture together, station locations, engineering, how all that's happening, so we can, you know, vet it out a little bit, and we can really ask some deep questions in a public meeting prior to having it come to a study session or a, you know. So I would like, I think Alex is the chair of that, so.
Okay. So we'll schedule that prior to.
Yeah. You can kind of look at it, beat it up, stretch it, push it.
No, it's fine.
Criticize it, appraise it. And Kyle will be there, so he'll be a great resource for that meeting.
Okay. That's good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation discussed by direction on natural gas residential rate comparison in the Magma service area.
We'll be here in just a second. There we go. Good morning, Mayor and Council. During our utility rate discussions, we had some issues or some questions come up on the differential in gas pricing in the Magma area versus Southwest gas pricing. We just wanted to come back and give you some background on that and get your possible direction on that. On slide two, and this is a big, long slide, program three, so that's good. What you saw in your presentation that generated these questions was the historic differential that we've had for the past 12 months. And we've just kind of broken that down into what it would be if we had our 2.5% rate increase on natural gas. It would be a overall price differential of $59.48 annually between the Magma and the Southwest gas pricing. That's made up of two components, and that's where this comes about in the trickiness of this. On the
Chuck, can I say something real quick? This is, we don't know what Southwest gas may be doing as far as rates
in the future. Yes.
So we're assuming they're staying the same. I'm sorry.
Yes. We always
just want to make that clear. We just had to make an assumption about where they are today. Okay.
What we always do, just as a general purpose, we put in our rates. We use everybody else's old rates so that we're not accused of projecting or speculating about their rate increases. So we don't know where they're going. On the system service charge annually, Southwest would be less than Mesa on the Magma rates at $29.58 annually. Now, where the differential comes about was on the price of gas, and that would be $89.06 on the pass-through on the annual for a net difference of the $59.48. Now, the problem with that is
Chuck,
that's basically
pause for just a second. Yes, explain what the pass-through is.
Pass-through is our recovery of the commodity we purchase on gas. So it's a dollar-for-dollar recovery of our pricing.
So the commodity cost can fluctuate over time.
Basically, $29.58 is the cost to use the system, and $89.06 the cost for the gas that's in the system.
That is correct.
Okay.
Now, what created this, if we had had a rate differential pass through to make up for that difference, this last year we would have made $668,000 more. The problem with that is there's no historic guarantee that the commodity pricing will stay in a differential standpoint. Next month we could be the same. So the amount of money that would be generated by creating a differential is not a guaranteed issue. We can, if we're directed, we could do this on a monthly basis and monitor this and create a charge for that differential, but I wouldn't, as a staff member, recommend that we budget anything against this revenue, but we'd come back, if at your direction, on a periodic basis during the year and discuss what that differential is.
Yeah, Councilman Higgins.
I don't understand what you just said. I don't understand why Mesa's paying a different price for the gas in Southwest is?
On our pass-through commodities, yes.
Just like we're buying it from the pipeline that's come from somewhere, right? And we pay different? The amounts and they do.
It's all based on the historic rates and the transportation and our contracts we have.
But like
we have different contracts.
Okay.
Short answer is yes, we pay a different price than Southwest Gas does.
Okay, and that's it. Because we're a different, just like any other commodity you go out and buy. But it's all coming from the same spot.
Maybe so, maybe no.
I mean,
there's different sources. Different pipelines now, I think.
But we're paying less.
Today we are.
Can we do this? I think what you're saying, what I'm hearing, just so we can cut through this, I think what you're saying is that the actual cost of the gas is if we're looking for comparability, we can't rely on the cost of gas because that fluctuates based on contracts, based on all sorts of other things. Why don't we concentrate then on the service system charges? Because that's something that we can.
Well, Mayor, here's what we're proposing.
Okay.
Is that I think the council has brought up a very valid idea, a reasonable idea. What we're suggesting to the council, instead of forecasting in what that difference might be today, is we go ahead, and if the council would so direct, we will adopt the policy that what we charge in the Magma area will be the same rate as what Southwest Gas is currently, or whatever they're charging. Okay, so it's always going to be comparable. That I think that's the essence of what the direction was to look at. What we're saying to council is we can put that into the way we charge for gas and Magma. What we're a little hesitant to do right now today is to project how much additional dollars that might be over the next 12 months. So what we would propose is put the policy in place and then report back to council at a future date and say, as a result of that, here is the differential that we've been able to collect for into the gas utility, and then come back to the council for direction on the utilization of those funds.
Well, I think what you're saying is that we follow the same approach that we follow with the electrical rates and SRP, which basically what we've said is that we're going, and this is a change, we're going to track SRP so we don't have the proverbial next or across the street differences, and the dollars will fall out where they fall out.
Right.
And we will budget based on the
how the council and say, here's what
we're not saying that our electrical utility is going to raise this much money, and we don't care what SRP charges. Here's what we're going to charge to get that much amount of money. We've sort of taken a backdoor approach to it, right, which says that it's most important for us to have rates that are comparable to the private companies, and therefore that'll produce whatever level of revenue it produces.
Right. And I think that we agree with the council. We would move if that's the council's direction. Excuse me. If that's the council's direction, we will put that in place. The only part of the formula that's missing here is to say, well, we're not going to forecast out what we think that revenue will be right now.
I hope we get that. I think we do. Because, once again, this is a long-term proposition, and I agree with Councilman Fenner when he first brought it up that it just seemed ridiculous that we have a whole service area, and we have, on the other side, we've usually been the one charging more, and now we're charging substantially less, and the question is why. I mean, Southwest Gas is a regulated utility. Their rates are monitored and set and established and approved by the Corporation Commission. Why should we be drastically different? We should be in the same ballpark as they are, for fairness, for everybody.
And that's what we,
Councilman Fender?
And I'm supportive of the way you're going with this. I just don't want to underestimate that we do negotiate some long-term commodity contracts, not on a month-to-month basis, but on years-to-basis. And I don't know exactly what that was, but I've watched in the past. So we do have some predictability and some forecasting on our commodity costs, and specifically natural gas. So I don't want to underestimate that. That is more predictable than maybe it, you know, feels. But I'm with this, and you know, we'll see how it falls out. And I'd love to get more information later on our how we, you know, negotiate our commodities contracts.
Okay. So as far as a specific rate, are we talking about first year, 1 year? Moving to adjust, or are we phasing? Are you
no? What we would propose to the council is that as part of the adoption of the utility rates, we would include some verbiage that would say we would benchmark against the Southwest gas rate as directed by the council, and that will allow us to adjust
monthly
on the commodity as which we do today. We adjust on commodity, but we'll adjust to where Southwest gas is.
Okay. On the commodity, what about the service system charges?
Well, what we're trying to do is we're going to adjust over the make the whole package, because if you look at the service commodity, they're actually lower than where we are. Is that correct?
And that recognizes our cost of servicing the area.
Okay, so you're looking at the total rate and
it'll
trying to
be
come
the total
up with something.
Where the adjustment will take place at the commodity as opposed to in the service fee.
Correct.
Okay.
Mayor, can I ask a question?
Oh, I get that. It's $29.50 less than Magma Service. I got that. Okay.
Thanks. Councilmember Finter brought this up under the budget discussion when we were cutting what parts of the fire department budget were we cutting? Help me out. You know, the volunteer, you know, different portions that we were looking at. And I mean, that's how that whole discussion was brought up in the first place. Is there any way that we could say, hey, this money saving is actually going to go back into those programs we were going to cut so that we're not just trying to make money off people? We're actually getting their rates to the level of the other neighbors, with the idea that we're taking that money to put it into this budget for fire prevention type stuff. And I'm sure we can do that, but I mean, to me, that is a reason why we don't just want to, oh, you're making more money on you. No. Well, yeah, we looked at it when we were looking at budget problems. So.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we can do it, but aren't we creating the very problem that you're talking about avoiding? Because I'm leery of attaching specific increases to specific programs, because that gives the appearance that that's the only reason why we're moving this. I think the idea is that we're providing a service, we're doing it for much less than the utility that's already out there, and therefore we should be at least in the ballpark of it. That, by chance, creates more revenue. That revenue goes into the general fund, which we can then decide how to put out. The problem is that, as we found with SRP, is that we cannot anticipate that is going to always produce more revenue. And we found that SRP went up, and it looked like we were way out of whack, and then all of a sudden they went down, and so that revenue
goes up and down. If your philosophy, and this is what I think we need to decide, is our philosophy to maximize the revenue, or is our philosophy to present a situation where our ratepayers are on even basis with adjoining ratepayers, which can go either way.
Right.
It can go up and down.
And I think that certainly was the context of the conversation, and
yeah.
I think we expect that. I think the concern we have is those are very important programs, and what we're concerned about is those costs are fairly constant once we plug
what
them
happens
in.
If the
but
revenue,
this revenue
yes.
could be fluctuating, yeah. and we're concerned about it's something that's like collect the revenue, then come back to council and say, okay, we have this revenue, you know, and how do we appropriate it then, as opposed to trying to forecast it ahead of time for program costs that are fairly consistent and fixed.
And the council Higgins, I think that's where we end up anyway. I mean, the reality is we're looking to allocate resources to programs that are at risk. And the fire prevention programs are certainly one of many. And the idea is, as a council, if we get additional resources in, there's no doubt
whatever
that
the priority at that
yeah,
point
we make, yeah,
council
that's right.
make that decision.
That we make that decision. So we end up, I think where you're saying anyway, I think that's how all of us think. It's great to, if we can pick up an extra $500,000, you know, what's going to be the highest priority? Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any disagreement that certainly public safety is a high priority. So I think we end up where you're yeah. saying anyway. Just
and I'm
process.
Willing, I think it's, I mean, there's some level, some point of, and there's an amount in here we could probably say at a minimum we would expect this much next
right.
year to give council something to work with going into the year. I'm just trying to be careful to be too aggressive in that forecast so that we don't get caught short. So there probably is some additional dollars just because there is a little separation now that will carry into next year. It's just trying to forecast commodity costs different, even Southwest Gas, where they're going to be into the future. But I think there's an amount we can bring to council to suggest that there may be some benefit for this next year.
Okay? I guess the question is it for the council, is this a philosophy that we feel comfortable
yes.
with? I see nods all the way around. Okay.
So we'll include that in the utility rate.
That we'll be coming forward with the ordinances and the resolutions.
So that'll
okay.
be included in there.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well done. Good job, Alan.
Item 4, acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Motion?
Second.
I have motion by Councilmember Fenter, a second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. We had several. Thursday, many of us on the council, the mayor and I in particular, were asked to speak at the Hawker Beechcraft grand opening. It's the third grand opening of a aircraft maintenance facility, bringing some much-needed high-wage jobs to the Phoenix-Mesa Gateway area. The very interesting to hear all the future plans and opportunities for the airport, and there's a lot ever-increasing interest in businesses moving to the airport. So this is just another one of many to come. Later that day, or maybe it was earlier that day, I lost track on Thursday. It was so busy. I attended the RPTA meeting. There was a knockdown, drag-out fight at the Regional Public Transportation Authority meeting.
As long as you were doing the knocking down and
dragging
out.
I was doing the knocking down, and I think I have some bruises and cuts to show for it. Like a married couple fighting over money, you know. Money seems to be the one issue. There continues to be certainly a lack of it and questions on whether we utilize what revenue we have to create the entire plan, the Prop 400 that folks voted on, even if that means setting up bus service that only comes around once an hour. And I've told Mr. Boggs, who is director of RPTA, you cannot, there's a rule in my meetings, you cannot use the word 1 hour and service in the same sentence, and it's questionable in the same paragraph. So, or we could create a system recognizing we're not going to get everything done on that plan, but we need to make a regional plan that moves people to places of commerce and places of business, and that is what I'm in favor of. That's something that you've brought up many times. I have a lot of empathy for folks over in the West Side, smaller communities like Avondale, El Mirage, Surprise, Buckeye, who really were in phase four of Prop 400 who are going to be struggling to get their bus service routes out there. You know, these are cities of between 20 and 50,000 people, and they are at a point where they could use some mass transit services. I empathize with them because I sit on that board as a representative of the city of Mesa as a whole. But I'm elected by the folks in Southeast Mesa, and I had asked the city clerk how many people were in Southeast Mesa, because we don't have a lot of bus service either, and there are 104,000 people in Southeast Mesa right now. So I empathize with you, but I'm bigger than most of you, and our transit systems are limited too, and we face the same challenges. Finally, on Friday, I attended the change of command ceremony for the Air Force Research Lab. It's obvious that they are outgoing. The new commander is now lieutenant colonel, was a colonel. Usually when you see a decrease in rank, you know that they're transitioning out. And while the Air Force Research Lab is transitioning out, there is still quite a bit of excitement about the possibilities of many of those folks who are doing some exciting work, research, some of it classified, much of it on the use of pilotless vehicles and drones, might stay here in Mesa and form their own companies and do the research here anyway. So those are the three events I did this last week.
Great, thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to thank you and your wife for co-chairing the annual Child Crisis Center Gala, which was held Saturday night. And the event was sold out. We had great representation from council. And thanks to the support from the city and mayor and the council, I can report that it was the most successful fundraiser the Child Crisis Center has ever had in its history. So we thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I had the opportunity to attend the Project Homeless Connect, which is a program that went on at Central Christian Church last Friday. And it is a project that every month the United Way of the Valley puts on this thing where they bring all sorts of social services together in one room, and probably a couple hundred volunteers that walk a homeless person through the process. Some feedback, well, there's actually a nice article yesterday in the Mesa Republic about the program, but they're able to do stuff in 2 hours that sometimes would take a couple of years, because, you know, you don't have a driver's license, birth certificate, you know, you're homeless, someone stole your bag, you have nothing. So it gives an opportunity to walk through all these services in one spot and really get a lot of things done to help them on their way to out of homelessness. Also, I was kicked off on Saturday, Bike for Life community bike ride, and it was attended by about 80 people who started off at Mountain View Park, at your district, Lindsay and Adobe, and we had a 12-mile bike ride, and there were Radio Disney was there, lots of kids having lots of fun, and it was a great event. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Vice Mayor.
Well, a number have been mentioned so far, but it was a busy time since our last meeting. Saturday morning, I started off out at the Longbow Golf Course for the Sister Cities Annual Golf Tournament for their big fundraiser, then came into downtown, as was mentioned, the kickoff of the public presentation of the whole plan for the Metro Rail downtown, then the child crisis. We also had, after the Hawker Beechcraft, there was a fire department volunteer dinner that many of us were in attendance there. We had yesterday morning the 5 and 10 year service awards for employees of the city of Mesa, which again, most of us were there. MacFest end of season, recognizing the work that they've done on MacFest, and we had farm breakfast with the Farm Bureau and U of A Extension Services and out at the Fitch Farm. So we've had a very busy time, but we have a lot of things going on, and the biggest point that I would like to make in all of this is we have a lot of tremendous people doing a lot of wonderful work, do a lot of service work, and a lot of people who are willing, even in hard times, to donate and participate in these fundraisers.
Thank you. Boy, listening to all these things that we went to, I know I'm tired. I now know why I'm tired. But I also had the opportunity on Sunday to help the St. Mark's Episcopal Church, along with Councilmember Kavanaugh,
celebrate the end of their 100th anniversary. You know, we forget that there's a lot of significant congregations that have been around in Mesa for a long time. This is, I can't even remember the number of congregations that have celebrated their 100th, and we're going to one again this this Sunday. You know, long history in Mesa, great contributions to our community, and we appreciate all the different congregations and organizations and associations and clubs that have really made this community what it is today, and we have a rich heritage and appreciate all them. So that was, appreciate the opportunity to participate with them in that. Okay, Mr. Brady.
Just remind the council about the joint meeting with the Mesa Public Schools Board at 6 p.m. at their Curriculum Services Center. And also, Councilmember Kavanaugh has his pancake breakfast and surfing this Saturday, May 1st. So bring your wetsuits from 8 to 10 out at Rhodes Junior High.
And your jams.
Yes.
Jammies? What is it? Jams. Jams.
And then we will have our council meeting on Monday.
Okay, well, we have to explain to Councilmember Ridge what jams are. Those are like surfer suits, bathing suits. You're way too young for
long,
that.
Long swim trunks.
Long swim trunks. They're actually called jams.
I saw that in one of those Elvis Beach movies.
Elvis or Frankie. Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello, either one of those.
That historic television channel.
Black and white. That would, some of them were in color. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Brady, yes, continue, please.
On Monday, we have the study session. That'll have an early start, most likely 4:30 for the council. We have a few items to follow up on the budget for that, and then we'll have our council meeting after following that. And then Council Member Higgins is reminding me that this, is it this Saturday?
That's what my calendar says.
This Saturday, there's a
fundraiser
at the Amy. So, is that right? Yeah. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Okay. Saturday night.
6 p.m.?
Yes.
Come on out. You can join at any time. Spend some money and fundraise for the Arizona Museum of Youth. Right?
Okay.
Yep. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you.
And it's casual. You can leave your black tie and tux at home.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, are there any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
All righty. I have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, Second Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.